So picture this, two young boys from the opposite sides of the tracks, one Jewish, one Roman Catholic, run into each other in a park in Romania and kick a soccer ball around. Let's catch up again, one says. And yes, they do catch up again, but the story of how they meet and then meet again is pretty incredible. It takes nearly 30 years, the darkness of a world war in between, some 13,000 kilometres, but serendipity, or was it fate, meant my next guests became one family. Yes, Cheryl Koenig's 86-year-old father, Fred Lowe, is Romanian. So is her 87-year-old father-in-law, Steven Koenig. Their extraordinary stories have been captured in Cheryl's book, With Just One Suitcase. And Cheryl, a well-known disability advocate, her father Fred, her husband Robert, and Robert's father Stephen joined me a little earlier in the Life Matters studio, and I gave them a big hearty welcome.
Hi, Natasha.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Very nice to be here.
I feel very privileged to have you all here. Cheryl, the roots of this story lie in Eastern Europe, in Romania, in the 1930s, but it's a night in Sydney at the Budapest Soccer Club where this story begins to reveal itself. What happened that night?
That night.
Cheryl and Robert. Yeah. And Robert's blushing at this point.
I am.
A little bit.
We lock eyes across a crowded room, so, you know, like the way young love does, and I think it was pretty much love at first sight, although I was only 15. We're at a family movie night. The Budapest Soccer Club used to do those sorts of things. And
your father wasn't sure about you being there. You had to explain that this was a family night.
That's right. I convinced him to take me down to the club, and he left me there and picked me up a couple hours later after I'd met somebody quite special.
Q, Robert, what do you remember of that night?
I do remember the night.
You better remember the night.
Most memorable night. I did turn, and Cheryl was sitting behind me, and she was very special. Even that split second, I knew, you know, that something was connecting pretty much straight away. So I introduced myself, and we went on from there, you know, 40 years ago.
Yes, 40 years ago now.
So 1975.
And it wasn't too long before a proposal happened.
No, only about 3 dates later. You know, when he kissed me for the first time, he said, "You know, I'm going to marry you." And I said, "Okay."
I am blushing now.
Well, both of you were aware that your fathers, Fred and Stephen, were both from Romania, but how much did you know about how much their story coincided?
Nothing. Absolutely zero, apart from that they came from Romania, and then, you know, it was kind of, where does your father come from in Romania? And when he said Timișoara, I kind of thought that was where my father came from. But, you know, as a 15-year-old, you don't really pay that much attention to your oldies, you know, where their stories. Yeah, so we just thought, yeah, okay, they come from the same city, and still didn't know any more than that.
I just needed to find out where Cheryl was living. She was living at Oatley. I was very close by. I was living at Lagana.
Yeah.
So we're only a few kilometres apart.
Mm.
And so that's what makes this story even more incredible.
Well, this is where we're heading. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
So, Fred, it's Christmas 1975, and you meet your daughter's young suitor, Robert. And in that moment, do you recognise Stephen, Robert's father?
Oh, that was a surprise.
Did you have any sense of recognition?
Yes. The recognition was that, you know, I knew the face, but then it sounded like impossible, you know, someone being here from the same small town where I come from, because actually very, very few Romanians were migrants those days in Australia.
Mm. Well, and you've both taken quite different paths to get here.
Yeah.
What about you, Stephen? In that moment when you saw Fred, what went through your mind?
I did recognize him immediately, you know, being Fred. And as soon as the memory came back, what happened in Romania in Timișoara, when I stepped in a fight which he had with some bigger boys than himself. So I did give him my hand, not fighting, but stopping it.
So what you're describing is your first meeting, and a very fleeting meeting, really, because war was landing and Jewish children like Fred were being targeted by the so-called brown shirts, weren't they?
That's correct.
And you, as a Roman Catholic boy,
that's right,
decided to defend Fred in that situation.
That's right. They had to fight really hard to stay alive.
Yeah.
But I did give my hand, like I said, I didn't fight, but I stopped it. And of course, part after that, we met again, which in a football field a couple of weeks later. And anyway, we become friends. Not close friends, but friends on a football field.
Yes, but it's the story of what happens in between now and then that you document in your book, Cheryl.
Yes.
And it is an incredible story because both your families were fundamentally changed by World War II.
As were all families. You know, it was a disintegration of families right across Europe. Of course, we know about the Holocaust and the suffering of the Jewish side of things, but all families were affected by war, which I've tried to sort of talk about impartially, if I could. It was a political and social bacteria there that affected that era.
Well, your family was absolutely transformed. Only two of your grandmother's relatives survived Auschwitz.
That's right.
All of them perished.
Yes, that's right. Only a couple of them survived. Dad's cousins, I think they were.
Yeah.
Yes, we haven't heard from them, so we don't know what they're doing, or if they, stayed together, or because things went on in Auschwitz that changed you forever also.
In fact, you start in a market in Timișoara in 1938. This memoir starts in a market, and that is actually an earlier encounter between Stephen and Fred, your two fathers.
Yes, my grandmother, who I call Anyu, which in Hungarian means mother, and even though, Dad's Romanian, they grew up speaking and they consider themselves, both of them, Hungarian because they both had Hungarian mothers. Timișoara, very close to the Hungarian-Romanian border, just about 170 k's from the border.
When war arrives, Fred, things get very frightening for your family because you were Jewish.
Yeah.
What do you remember of that time and what changed for your family?
They were very uncertain times. We didn't know whether we were going to be put in a concentration camp and deported. They had my father put in a camp for a short while and then let them loose. Actually, Timișoara was a better part of Romania where Jewish people survived in bigger number.
Mm.
And we're just trying to go for survival. That's all what was in our mind, because the rest of the family, they all were taken. So we just kept along to see how we can escape.
How did your day-to-day life change with that threat hanging over your family?
Well, you appreciated when you came to Australia the freedom. What's freedom all about? And I had it all the time in my mind, trying to escape from there. Even after the war, when the communists taken over, I became very anti, because it taken your freedom away. So I was thinking about leaving.
So Romania switches allegiances. Communism takes control of Romania. And in fact, both of you are profoundly affected by that time. Your father makes arrangements for you and your brother to escape, but you escape without your family. How did you escape?
We escaped very similar to here nowadays, people smugglers. But unfortunately, we went in two lots, like my brother and myself and some other people, and in case we get caught, we didn't want to go down the whole family, and we escaped successfully, and my parents, they were due to leave in a fortnight's time. They couldn't leave because the people smugglers got caught and they got shot dead. So they had to wait another 4 years before we met up.
So you were on your own. How old were you?
I was 18.
I was 16 when you left.
So just a boy.
Yeah.
When you were 16, Stephen, and the communists had come to control Romania, you were wrenched from your family to work in the gulag, in the Russian labour camps.
Yes, 3 years.
What do you remember of that experience? What stays with you?
I do remember all of them. I've been taken from home. Of course, the government put the law out, and every family who is Hungarian or German must give one person per household for slave labour in Russia.
I'm trying to imagine what your mother must have felt at that point.
Yes. Mm. And anyway, they took us down and we get into trains, and the trains were only cow wagons, you know, with a straw on the floor, and that's all you got. And then we went to Russia. Russia was a hell. Incredible, the living standard of in Russia, because they put us into the camp as a prisoner of war. And of course, I was only 16. Yeah.
You tried to escape.
I did.
And so things got worse.
Of course, much worse.
Unimaginable.
Yes. I tried to escape from three different camps. You know? Every time, they matter of hours, they called us. And luckily, never ever they brought us back, because they had camps all over the Russian, you know, for prison. Because even in 1947, when I'd been released, there was still thousands and thousands of prisoner of war in Russia in the camps.
Stephen, what did you have to do in those camps?
We worked, you know. We worked in a factory. And of course, I was a bit luckier. I was young. On top of that, I spoke very well Russia too.
Mm.
No?
That helped.
Oh, that helped. And Romanian, Hungarian, and German, you know, that helped too.
He's being a bit humble. He taught himself all of that. That was his plan, to become an interpreter, so that he could go about the camp and act as an interpreter and get more privileges. And with that came a little bit more food, not much more. But, you know, it certainly helped his survival, I think, because not many lived, I mean, to tell the tale of the gulag. They were pretty, pretty nasty places.
Did your fathers tell you any of this as you were growing up?
Well, my father, Stephen, he holds a lot of things close to his chest.
Mm.
Doesn't really talk about those sort of things. Cheryl did very well to get the details out of my father.
I was amazed. I mean, I knew nothing of Stephen Stetel. Of Dad's, I knew, you know, how they had escaped with people, smugglers and that kind of thing. But with Robert's father, I remember interviewing him, and when he was telling me the story about how he was placed in solitary confinement outside in the snow, in the winter snow of Russia, and in a 1 meter by 1 meter wooden box, for some meagre thing that he did, you know, asked for another cup of food or something like that. He was in there for 24 hours and in these pyjama-like thin clothes and no food, no water. And I remember looking up at him and saying, my God, how did you survive? Actually, it was this book I started to write during my own quest for survival, when I was packing my own small suitcase because I had a life-threatening diagnosis of my own that I wanted to get through, so I was trying to distract myself by writing this story.
What a distraction.
Yes. I certainly took my mind off my own troubles, and I remember saying to him, my God, how did you survive that? He just looked at me and said, Cheryl, you have only one choice. You must choose to be a survivor. So from that day on, I had a lot of complications, and I still do 5 years later, I just think of those words. I choose to be a survivor. I'm going to survive this.
Well, I'm joined in the studio by, well, four survivors, evidently.
Yeah.
We have Fred Lowe, the father of Cheryl Koenig, the wife of Rob Koenig, whose father is Stephen Koenig.
You got that right.
And Cheryl has written a book with just one suitcase, the incredible story of these two men, Fred and Stephen. Stephen, You did get out of the gulag. You got out alive, which is incredible. You kept people alive on the train out.
Yeah.
It's a very tough story that Cheryl tells.
Yeah.
And it was a doctor who was in the camp who wondered why you were so young.
Yes.
That helped, that essentially said,
exactly,
I'm going to get this kid out.
Yeah.
And so you did get out. Were you reunited with your parents?
No, I wasn't. When I came out, we came to Germany. And in Germany, of course, I find out Hungarians on the communist regime. I wouldn't go back to the communist regime. So I stayed there, and the first time after 3 years, I wrote home to Romania, to Timișoara. And I had a reply and told me my other brothers are in Germany too.
They'd survived.
That's right.
They'd been fighting in the war.
Exactly. They were in the army and they finished up in Germany as prisoner of war. But of course they've been released and they're free people.
And so you became free people in Australia. Fred, why Australia? Did you have a choice?
I had a choice actually because the quota, they went by quota, and Romanians, there were very few escapees, you know, and so they put it forward, you know, what countries you could come. And I choose Australia because the Olympic Games were due to be here in 1956, which I wanted to being a sports person.
Soccer mad?
All sports, you know, yeah. But mainly soccer. And I chose to come here.
And what was that like when you landed here with your brother?
I was prepared to do any work, take up anything. The survival was number one. Never ran short of anything in this country.
And then you met your love?
Yeah, I met my wife and we had 5 beautiful children.
What about you, Stephen? How did you come to be in Australia?
We tried to apply for going to America. Of course, the quota of America was full, couldn't go there. So we tried to get to Canada. It wasn't the same thing, you know. So where can we go? They said, oh, across the road is the Australian office. So we went there. In a matter of 2 weeks, we were on a ship from Italy to Australia. We didn't know nothing about Australia. Didn't know it existed until then.
I wonder how you all reflect then on the current refugee debate.
I think they're contemporary themes, really, you know, in some ways, and yet in other ways, it's hard to compare. As Dad said, people, smugglers, risked their own lives. That's one major difference. I think we all know that people smugglers, especially, Indonesia or North Africa from wherever, they just push people out to sea to drown. So there is that difference. But we have to be compassionate at the same time and remember that nobody ever really wants to leave all that they know, their homeland, their parents, everything behind without a good reason. Well, in most cases, let's say. So there's that similarity. But again, we have to be certain of who we let in. In those days, too, they stayed until they had legal paperwork. They often stayed in camps for up to 2 years in Europe before they had the legal paperwork. You know, in my research, I sort of found that out. They weren't allowed here without documentation.
I'm wondering what impact writing this all down has had on you, Cheryl. And the fact that these two gentlemen, your two fathers, were living just kilometres away from each other in Australia with these parallel stories.
Yes.
Incredible.
I know. They were living just a couple of k's apart in Romania, in Timișoara, and then they end up still living a couple of k's apart and came out only probably 6 or 8 months between.
That was the biggest surprise, actually, that somebody from the same town lived even here in Australia, not mind you, just 2 k's away.
Yeah, yeah. But
and you become one family.
We became one family. Really, it was an eye-opener for me unpacking their 2 suitcases because I learned so much more about who they were and why they are even like they are today. You know, they were both, they went through so much that, you know, I only skimmed across the surface of as a child, you know.
What did you learn?
I learned, you know, Dad, he had a fiery temperament, let's call it that, and he used his fists as his valor, and it made me understand why he did, because, you know, they, you know, persecution then was for a 13-year-old kid when, you know, every day after school, he had to live by his wits and his fists kind of thing, you know. And he also was influenced by this paradigm of money, you know, as the life force then. And of course, it is still today. But then it was a corrupt one because he's only alive because they were able to bribe themselves to freedom, you know, with corrupt Romanian officials. And
his father did that?
Yes, yeah. But in a way, it kind of taught me not only who they were, but when I closed their suitcases, I felt like I knew myself better. I felt like the past is our reference point, really, even though we mightn't want to admit it at times. It is who we are, who we are. Our learning is really bootstrapped on past learning.
What did you come to understand about yourself?
I often thought I didn't want to be like my mum. I ended up becoming more like her, or I am like her in a lot of ways, you know.
This is Joan.
Yeah, mm. Yeah, a lot of ways. She was very community-minded and, you know, mayor and had a political life and did, you know, patron for 100 community organisations. And when I do all that kind of thing, and when I received...
You've had an incredible impact on the community of those living with disability.
Yes, and when I received my OAM last year and Dad came to that, I felt like I was standing in Mum's shoes. That's it in a nutshell, really.
Congratulations to both of you, survivors, and what a great thing to have you both in the studio and in the same city to do this interview. Fred and Stephen, thank you very much for making the time.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And Cheryl, congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
Incredible story, real story. And Robert, thank you very much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Been a pleasure, Ben.
Cheryl Koenig, Robert Koenig, Stephen Koenig, Fred Lowe. What a story. And Cheryl's book, which explains it all, is just With Just One Suitcase. It's published by Wild Dingo Press. And Cheryl herself is a very well-known disability advocate as well. And in fact, they launched the book at a fundraiser for carers. So big hearts all the way through. A man with a big heart is going to be hosting you on RN for the next hour this morning, Books and Arts.
Here I am.
Hello there. How are you today?
Oh, I'm very, very well. Thank you very much. We're inspired by Marina Warner today. Now, Marina Warner is an English writer who says it's about time people who speak English and read in English understood that there are all these other novels being written in other languages, that translation is actually a doorway to a whole other way or other ways of seeing the world. And so we're going to take her up on this and talk to the Hungarian writer Laszlo Krasznahorkai and also to a Canadian writer
who won the Man Booker International Prize this year.
That's the one. And also to a woman called Kim Twee, who we spoke to at the Sydney Writers Festival.
Yeah, imagine all the books that we're missing out on.
Heaps of them.
All the books. Coming up straight after the news, it's 10 a.m.